ruin from the Desert Storm by Blue Sunshine, read by Sam Gabriel, based on the works of George Lucas. Chapter 4.
Wake up. My apologies, but I need you to wake up now.
Ben nudged the others awake, Cedrin having managed a fitful rest and Wyn having all but collapsed from his nerves. Soon was made of sterner stuff, but she was also old, and the situation at hand was wearing on even her firm resolve.
What has happened?
Soon inquires tiredly, having worked with Jedi before and understanding a little of their ways. Her voice rattles through her mask, exacerbating the impression of her weariness.
The Jedi and Judicial Forces have arrived, Ambassador,
Ben smiles grimly, though she probably can't see it in the dark.
It's time for us to escape.
Should we not wait for them to rescue us?
Delegate Wyn trembles, his hands shuffling on the ground as he tries to gain his bearings.
Is it not safer?
Safer for us, perhaps, but not for those who would have to fight through the entire complex of Yamri to find us,
Ben explains, reminding himself to be patient. They know nothing of war, not yet.
You think they will fight?
Soon inquires.
The Yamri. Surely they know they will not succeed.
They don't know yet, but they certainly will soon, Ben says. And I feel that they will fight, and they will try to erase what has happened here and build over it, as they erased them ever inhabited Tavorsky and built their colonies over the ruins.
If we must, we must.
Cedrin pushes herself up on the ground, standing uneasily, hands spread wide in the way of those who cannot see while in the dark, trying to find their boundaries.
Shall we?
Ben quirks a smile at her dry enthusiasm. Allow me, he offers and moves to the door. He feels along the inner frame, hand skimming just shy of being electrocuted by the shielding, and feels the slight disconnect where the stone doesn't quite form with the metal. Ben slips his senses inside the sliver of space and then tells himself to expand as stars do. There is a terrible screaming wrench as the framework crumbles and breaks, and then he yanks it free, the shield sparking and guttering out, leaving nothing between them and the tunnels. Undoubtedly, dozens of slaves would have heard that. Not one comes to investigate.
I can't let you do this!
Obi-Wan insists, placing himself once more in Zhai Shilao's way. There is blood in the dust on the street, and the sobs that accompanied its making by those who are now dead rattle in his mind. He forces himself not to flinch, not to turn to find those who are crying, because they are not there.
You cannot stop us, little Jedi.
Zhai Shilao places a hand on his shoulder and steps around him, again barking orders to the gathering Kalish. And there are many more of them today than there were yesterday, having been called in for the assault on Kirsk.
Please!
Obi-Wan shouts, turning to face Zhai Shilao's back.
If you attack, the Jedi will fight to defend the Yamri! People will die! Kalish and Jedi!
Our people are prepared to die,
Leish Kumar tells him, moving to stand beside her partner.
If yours are not, they should not defend the Solus. Their hook are not worth their efforts, or their sacrifice.
Obi-Wan screams a wordless frustration, rage and hate that are not his, pressing in all around him.
Fight me!
He yells.
If all you care for is blood, it doesn't matter, right? Fight me, and if I win, then you won't do this. The Republic will deal with the Yamri. They will free your people and make sure this never happens again. Just please, don't do this,
he begs.
All we care for is not blood,
Zhai Shilao sighs, staring back at Obi-Wan, whose chest is heaving with the effort just to be.
I do not want to fight you. I do not want to fight your Jedi. They have no part in this war, and it will be a waste. But this is a war my people must win.
Through violence? Through genocide? Killing their children makes you no better than they are.
I am no hook,
Zhai Shilao shouts back at him.
I do this for all Kalish. that the hook may never again hunt our people, never again tear us apart, enslave us, devour our children.
We fight for our freedom and our future, little one, Leish Kamar says. This is our justice. Do not the Jedi believe it is deserved?
This is not justice, this is revenge.
Obi-Wan shakes his head and pulls his lightsaber from his belt, grasping it with both hands.
We will not fight you. Leish Kamar's eyes narrow. You are not our enemy. You have saved our children and brought them back to us.
Other warriors bring their mounts to him, and Obi-Wan doesn't know what to do. He can still barely stand, and all they have to do to avoid fighting him is walk away. He has no power to stop them, but he has to do something. He can't just give up. He wants to let himself sink to the ground and settle in the dust. He wants to let everything slip away so he'll stop feeling it, wants to not be responsible for the lives whose deaths are looming above him. He wants to cry. But he looks up at Jai Shilal and sees the shadow of his master, as if this were any other day in the Sal, and he feels hopeless. And all his master does is look back at him and believe. Believe in everything that Obi-Wan could ever be. Obi-Wan hates him for it sometimes, but every time he gets back up, he doesn't give in.
I do this for all, Kalish. That the hook may never again hunt our people, never again tear us apart, enslave us, devour our children.
We fight for our freedom and our future.
Obi-Wan pulls in a deep breath, ignoring the reek of bodies beginning to rot, trying to ignore the cold, dark edges creeping into his thoughts, and the emotions that aren't his, that he hopes at least aren't his. It's hard. Harder than running through the jungle all night long, harder than the endless repetitions of Shi Cho his master still has him practicing until he can no longer stand. Harder than trying to figure out how he was supposed to say goodbye to Bant. Say goodbye to ever being a Jedi, but it's not impossible.
May the Force be with me.
I am a Jedi Padawan, and a representative of the Galactic Republic, sort of. I can give you what you want. I can promise that the Yamri, that the Hook, will never again hurt your people, never again tear you apart, enslave you, sell you, devour your children. I can promise you your freedom and your future. Just talk to me. Please just talk to me. Trust me. I know it's a lot to ask, but it is all I'm asking for.
Obi-Wan pleads.
Jai Shilal and Leish Kumar turn to each other, unreadable behind their masks and the scattering presence of so many other people that Obi-Wan can't blot out or sort through, their emotions shouting at him in the Force. After a minute or 10, they turn back to Obi-Wan.
How?
And despite his primary duty to protect the delegates, Ben does not lead them right up and out of the tunnels. Instead, he follows the call of so many crowded, miserable life forms and breaks open a dozen cells like their own, shattering shock collars and shackles with the Force. Like all slaves who have always been slaves, they at first do not believe that they are free. They fear a trick, they are paralyzed by the chance that it is only an illusion, and then, like a tide, they rise up. He may have just unleashed a bloodbath, but Beru Whiteson did not sit him at her kitchen table when he was more wounded than a man should be and still live, and tell him of Ekreth and Aramu, of Leia and Luka, so that he would one day step past the chains of the enslaved while he walked free. She had poured the desert into him, and though he did not know the name of her people, did not share those last secrets and become one of them, he knew what they knew. The desert is life. She had saved him. He would save them. The tunnels writhe and shift with so many bodies, barely visible in the dark. And when Ben knows that those he has freed are capable of freeing those not yet so, he resumes the charge of the delegates, who are so very frightened of the noise and clamor of the slaves. They do not recognize it is the outpouring of joy and relief of those who have at long last grasped hope with both hands.
He leads them up a stair and becomes the instrument by which they are harmed when an unexpected blow strikes him center mass, throwing him back down the stairs and into the delegates. He gasps and gasps, trying to heave in air. And the hand he presses to his chest comes back wet. A little lower and the cutting blade arm would have gutted him. He's lucky his sternum doesn't crack as he throws himself back to his feet and throws the force at the Yamri storming down the stairs to finish cutting them down. It shrieks high and metallic, and Ben ducks another blade arm, slicing over his head in the blackness, pulling Pullum Wynn down with him lest the Quermion be decapitated. Wynn cries out in terror. The Yamri have no trouble with the dark, but neither does Ben. He has no weapon but himself and the Force, and so he uses the Force, and throws the Yamri again, snapping it into the wall with such velocity that its body breaks. It goes against everything Jedi taught to use the Force this way, but Ben and his fellows had unlearned many lessons on the battlefield. He guides the delegates up, and they never know about the body they cannot see.
Ah, criffing Sith damned hells!
Mace Windu disarms a Yamri guard with his lightsaber, protecting a fellow knight who is struggling to keep up with their larger opponents. They are trying to avoid any unnecessary deaths, but the Yamri's blade arms are devastatingly lethal, and they are vastly outnumbered, at least until the Khalees start pouring up into the complex, and there is a confusion of who is on whose side as they attempt to hold ground. This is, of course, further complicated by the war party Mace has just been informed of, approaching from the east. The Khalees slaves are making weapons of anything they can get their hands on, and every time they down a Yamri, they butcher it to make sure it's dead. The Jedi try to intervene, only to themselves be attacked with fervor. The Yamri try to cut down the Khalees, and the Khalees will keep trying to kill them while the Jedi step in to try and save their lives. It's an impossible situation.
Guard ourselves we must, Yoda calls out. Hold the landing ground. Hold the atrium. Here we shall stand.
He doesn't know exactly why the violence erupted. They had been speaking with Speaker Sadek and Art Bode, discussing what the situation was, asking after the other delegates, and they had been attacked from behind, and then all hell had broken loose. He has a feeling he's going to be blaming Ben Nasadeh for it. Some way or another, this is his fault. They do manage to carve out and hold the landing pad in the atrium, the boundary giving the Jedi a chance to rotate out when fighters need to rest. The Khalees and the Yamri continue to clash, and the Jedi try to siphon the uprising Khalees into their safe harbor to take them out of the fighting, trying to attrition the violence into tapering off. There are so many Khalees kept as slaves beneath Kirsk.
We can't do this forever, Master Yoda!
Nightalis shouts.
Something has to give!
Give something will,
Yoda replies, knelt beside a moaning Khalees to attempt to heal his wounds. Once they are taken out of the fight, the Jedi recognize how very emaciated and deprived the Khalees are. Many of them are sallow-skinned, almost colorless, and bone-thin where they should have special reserves of fat for lean times. Many of them struggle with how bright it is outside, having spent far, far too long away from the sun. There are sharp, high vocalizations on the far side of the landing pad, and Windu turns, bracing for a second wave of attack, hearing the thunder of many, many beasts and fighters. But the thunder slows, and the wave doesn't crash against them. A flash of red and gray slides off one of the beasts, and Padawan Kenobi breaks through the ranks of judicial forces holding that side of the landing pad, making for Master Yoda. Mace is supremely relieved to see the young Padawan, and a second look quells that relief. He looks horrid. His hair is greasy with too much sweat, his pallor ashen under sunburn and dust, and a bright burst of red stains his right eye. Oh, sweet carking hells. Mace thinks furiously. Nasadeh's psychic outcry had buckled fully fledged knights. His Padawan was lucky to be conscious, let alone holding it together well enough to walk and talk. And he's talking.
But that didn't work, and I had to do something, so I...
Hush, hush, Padawan Kenobi.
Yoda lifts a hand, stopping the breathless outburst.
Done well, you have. Breathe, you should. And introduce us to your new friends, you will.
Kenobi sucks in a breath, and Mace eyes the fine tremors shaking through his body warily. Two of the Kalish warriors have been let through the perimeter, and the difference between them and the freed slaves is all the more drastic.
Jedi Masters Yoda and Mace Windu, I have the honor to introduce Warlords Zhai Shilal and Liege Kumar of Kali.
Kenobi dips to each of them in turn, exactly as he was taught in his diplomatic courtesies class. He nearly unbalances as he bows, however, and his voice is hoarsened by his uneven, heavy breathing, both signs of dangerous exhaustion.
To meet you, an honor it is, and much to discuss we have.
Master!
Kenobi shouts, startling all four of his elders. And the boy darts off with a pull of force-enhanced speed, as three knights and Master Nasadeh charge the delegates through the corridor to the atrium and out into the open room overlooking the landing pad. The Quermian delegate immediately flops to the floor, stressed beyond measure. The Chilakton and Keldor delegates do not collapse quite so dramatically, but they too are much the worse for wear. Nasadeh's copper saber winks out a bare blink before his Padawan slams into him in relief, and both of them topple over, which Windu had not expected. Whatever else he has issue to pick with Nasadeh, the man is a solid fighter, and never unprepared for a blow to fall.
Healer!
Kenobi cries, scrambling back on hands and knees, the front of his gray tunic stained gory red from his contact with his master. A judicial medic jumps up from a moment of respite and runs across the platform, Windu, Yoda, and the two Kalish following quickly after. Mace bites down an instinctive flinch when they get close enough that he can see a shiver of pale bone through the gaping wound. He has already seen Kalish cleaved nearly in half from the strike of a Yamri blade arm, and one knight had been severed of a hand. For the most part, Nasadeh's sternum seems to have taken the brunt, but the gash runs from shoulder to navel.
Will he live?
It would be a petty way to die, given the things I've survived,
Ben complains to the speaker, groaning as his world swims back into existence.
Padawan, that hurt, he groans.
It's not my fault you let some bug get the better of you,
Obi-Wan retorts hotly, voice wet with tears.
Bug? They're 9 feet tall,
Ben protests.
What's that got to do with it? You're a Jedi Master.
They got lucky. I didn't let...
Lucky? You have the Force!
His Padawan throws up his hands.
Will you both shut up?
Mace Windu cuts in, arms crossed, looking very peeved. This is neither the time nor the place. Ben glowers at Mace, knowing full well that his Padawan is glowering at him, and Yoda is sighing deeply at all of them. Then he notices...
Chimayin Zhai Shilal, General Grievous.
A different body, a different life, but the same mask, the same eyes. The medic scowls at him for tensing, for moving. But Ben feels too vulnerable, too weak, lying on the ground with the warlord standing over him.
Master, stay down!
Obi-Wan pushes on his shoulder, kneeling next to him, and Ben reaches up and grips the boy's wrist, squeezing, trying to ground himself. Obi-Wan hesitates at the unexpected touch and then settles down, looking between his master and the Kalish.
Your little one is a credit to you, Zhai Shilal nods.
He is a credit to himself,
Ben replies, and then curses to all 9 levels of Corellian hells at the unintended double meaning. Obi-Wan blushes a little, and lets out a huff of breath, looking terribly exhausted. Awful, really.
He has offered us a future, Liege Kumar says, in exchange for sparing the lives of these soulless hawk, and avoiding a conflict with the Jedi.
Negotiate on behalf of the Republic, did you, Padawan Kenobi?
Yoda lifts a brow, and Obi-Wan shrinks under his regard.
That authority you have not.
But I do, and his word is my word. Ben speaks up and curses himself twice over again. His Padawan relaxes with that reassurance, and Yoda grumbles. That depends entirely on what he's said, Mace points out warningly, arms crossing. Ben twitches when the medic jabs him with an IV needle. He glowers, but the woman is unrepentant.
Must you discuss this right now? My patient is in need of a blood transfusion and several hundred sutures, she complains.
My Padawan needs my support, Ben says waspishly. That's more important.
It's not going to be when you pass out, the medic argues.
Then let him pass out, Windu mutters just loud enough to hear. Obi-Wan offers the counselor a dropped jaw and a dirty look, and Windu shuffles uncomfortably for it.
How do you accomplish anything?
Xia Shilao frowns at all of them.
Slowly,
Yoda grumbles.
I can see that,
Leish Kamar remarks wryly. Ben clears his throat loudly, and then bites down another groan, because the medic hasn't hit him with a hypospray for the pain yet, and it hurts.
Padawan, what did you promise the Kalish?
3 planets, 4 moons, and the entire Yamri fleet, apparently. Every colony world, every advanced outpost, and all the higher-level technology they could strip from the Yamri, banishing them back to their homeworld and instituting a blockade to effectively cut off all means of further expansion.
The homeworld is self-sustaining, Obi-Wan explains. All the extra resources were, well, what the Trade Federation were interested in, I suppose. They don't necessarily need the higher-grade ores and minerals they were trading for if we give the Kali their starships, and until they get past the whole eating the eggs of other sentient species bit, it's best that they're not traveling the galaxy.
Be that as it may, you can't strip a people of their rightful colonies. That's not legal, even if they've committed this kind of atrocity.
They aren't rightful colonies. They haven't settled a single unoccupied moon or world outside their own solar system, Obi-Wan states. The Kalish have records. Tavarsky? Kisk? All their settlements here are built on the ruins of a people that are now extinct because of the Yamri. This was the species they hunted before they found Kali.
The Padawan's face is grim and pained, and Ben wraps his presence around him, trying better to buffer him from the psychic input of the planet. Obi-Wan has good shields due to their intense training, stronger and denser and trickier than most his age, but he hasn't learned yet how to cement them in his mind. He has to focus on them to keep them, and he can't do that constantly. With those constructed shields down, Ben had torn right through his natural defenses. Master Windu, Ambassador Sworn, and the judicial officers listening in are all dumbfounded by that revelation. But Master Windu recovers quickly.
Very well, then.
The Jedi will stand by the Kali in this, he states. But first we have to stop the fighting here and now. He looks to the 2 warlords.
We have agreed to be lenient, Leish Kamar spits lowly. On the honor of our ancestors.
Windu looks to Yoda, who seems lost in thought. And that's the last Ben sees before the world wobbles and turns dark.
Chimayen Jai Shilal, warrior of the Kali people, has long been held to be god-touched by his kin and clan and warriors, the dreamer they call him. After the vision that led him to the hunt that led him to Rondaru Leish Kamar, the dreamt one. His heart of hearts. This warrior, he thinks, is God-touched too. All Jedi seem to carry the world around them as elders do. Even their young do this, but this one, he does not carry the world. He carries death. Not as Jai Shilal does, not in his hands and heart, but in a shroud that falls from his shoulders and buries the stars and has no end. Jai Shilal looks into his eyes and knows truth.
This man is my death. This man is my life.
This is the wisdom the ancestors grant him, and he heeds it. They do not let him join the fighting when he wakes again. There are many others to fight, and he is wounded. His Padawan they do not let fight either, and Shilal is glad. The child is brave, but not well, and not old enough for a blood hunt besides. When the fighting is done, they pull another being from its hiding place, a reptilian with metallic red-orange eyes, and the Jedi tear strips from him with their words as he stutters and argues and denies and lies. They do not believe him, and Shilal finds this good also. Nasadeh, the warrior, watches that one, bowed, and his lip curls darkly. The Trade Federation should learn not to think they hold the Jedi on a leash. He speaks with no hint of that snarl, voice cool and cutting. They should learn we will not tolerate such abuse of power. Bode sneers back at him, and the warrior ignores his pretense of defiance. He is lying on the ground, sat up against a medical crate, his Padawan sitting on the crate, hovering. He looks weak and ill, yet when he meets Zha Shilal's eye, Zha Shilal sees not a man but a Karabak, a shadow of deadly teeth and glittering intelligence that hunts the Icelands and is prey to none. You have many valuable resources now at your disposal, Kagan Zha Shilal. The Trade Federation, of which Delegate Bode represents, has great interest in those resources. It is why they supported the Yamri in subjugating your people, after all, he says, and Bode sputters indignantly. Liege Kumar snarls in his direction, brandishing a blade, and Bode quells himself, though she will not act on the threat as she wants to, not with the Jedi near. The Kali people do not break their word. The trading clans do not have the reach of the Federation. They are many smaller kin groups, and they cannot be as generous as the Trade Federation, but they possess certain qualities that others severely lack. If it is agreeable to your people, the Jedi and I personally would be more than happy to send some of them your way, Nasadeh offers smoothly. Zha Shilal turns to Liege Kumar, for he has not the best grasp of the other language, but she shows understanding and approval. And so he agrees. Nasadeh's pleased smile is a Karabak smile. For the text of this and other stories by the same author, visit the AO3 page of Blue_Sunshine. Music is Lonely Desert by Emily of Roll for Fantasy. Special thanks to Sakiko. If you would like me to record a story, voiceover, or character, please get in touch with me using the contact information on my website, which is samgabrielvo.com. And there you can find other ways to support me, as well as a link to my Discord server, where I record things live for your enjoyment. And finally, as always, thank you for listening.